Oh man, I tell you what, game day is coming. It's going to be so exciting. I hope you will plan to join us here coming this February. Well, hey, Happy New Year to you. It's so good to be back with you this weekend. My name is Kurt, and if we've not had a chance to meet, it's great to meet you. Great to have you with us. If you are here for the first time, we hope it's not your last time, and we're glad you're tuning in from wherever you may be tuning in from today. Now, we hope you had a great Christmas and a great New Year. We're in the third weekend of 2022. Did you guys all have a good start to 2022? Yeah, okay, good. Man, awesome. Well, I tell you what, it's been a season, you know, here, and it's been a season for us. We had a great run at Christmas, great run of Christmas Eve services, 7 services over the week of Christmas. And then, of course, in the middle of that, we taped New Year's Eve at home so that we could have an experience online for you to come into your home. And then that also allowed all of our staff and our leaders and our volunteers here at Cross Point to have a Sabbath rest as we got to the last weekend of the year and began 2022. Now, in our family, just before Christmas, one of my daughters, she began to come down with some COVID symptoms. And of course, you know, the big question is it a cold? Is it allergies? Is it COVID? And so, you know, we had her tested along with a couple others of our family members who were at the time having some symptoms, and all the results were negative. So we're like, all right, we're going to keep going through the season. And we do testing pretty regularly in our family. In fact, I test pretty regularly because I'm interacting with people on a regular basis and in front of people. And so, you know, it was just one of those things where we do everything we can to stay safe and play our part in the role. And so we did some traveling right after Christmas, and our family was together in the car and tight spaces and hotel rooms. And the symptoms continued for a few more days. And so we tested again. And, you know, this time, 2 of our family members came back positive, which we were like, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? Because we just spent a whole bunch of hours in a small van, I mean, a big van, but a small vehicle for 6 of us together. And so, you know, we kind of put them into isolation, and we called it the COVID cave in our basement. That's what that took on the name of. And it was kind of, you know, like they're down there then, and you know, we're delivering meals, you know, with masks on, and they're isolating, and, you know, they're kind of on their own for the week, which don't feel too bad for them because it's like a posh place down there. They got like gaming systems and TVs and, you know, a full bath and, you know, a bedroom and multiple beds and a bar, not alcohol for them, but, you know, like drinks, refrigerator, the whole deal. I mean, it's like they could live down there. And so the bummer of it was that we all of a sudden for the rest of the holidays, it's like, man, we're going to be isolated. We're not going to be able to be together, you know, for the remainder of this season. And so a couple days later, you know, a couple others of us, myself included, had some symptoms and so tested again. And 2 more of us came down positive at that point. And so I was headed to the COVID cave. Good news is it was like a party in the cave. That's what was happening. We were all down there together, and I'm not exactly sure how this started, but our kid, there you go, you got a picture of us, you know, hanging out, getting one of our meals. And my older 2 kids began a series of movies. I think it started with Adam Sandler, and it just kind of took off, and it went from him to, you know, Will Ferrell to Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson, and we had all kind of, it was like a movie party every single night. The internship multiple times, which I'll share a little bit more on here in a moment, but it was lots of fun. And then, you know, even though we were sick, and, you know, a couple days later, I said to my wife, you know, you and our other daughter probably should test again because you've been around us. And wouldn't you know, we went 6 for 6. I don't know that COVID is what you want to go 6 for 6 on. Free throws, perhaps at bats, you know, but COVID, I don't think 6 for 6 is the goal. But the good news is we all got to spend the rest of the holiday season together, isolating together. And everybody's fine, by the way. We're all vaccinated. In fact, 3 of us are boosted. And for the most part, it was mild symptoms, sniffles. You know, I got hit, I think, a little hard. I don't know why they say I'm the wimp in the group, but like, I've just been so tired. But I'm telling you, I'm kind of telling everybody, man, get vaxxed. Get vaccinated if you're not vaccinated. Get boosted if you are vaccinated. This thing's a doozy, and I know many of you have been experiencing this as well, but I'm telling you, I don't know that if I wouldn't have the vaccine, I would be here right now. I think I would have been in a lot worse place. So I just want to say thank you to all the nurses, all the doctors, medical teams that are helping people get vaccinated in our community. Let's just thank them, because you guys, I tell you what, you saved our holiday break and allowed us to enjoy it because of the work you're doing, and specifically our doctors and nurses that are taking care of our family and have over the last week. So we're just so thankful, and it's good to be back with you today. Now, We're in week two of the series, Better Decisions, Fewer Regrets. And speaking of Vince Vaughn and Owen Wilson and the movie The Internship, I'm going to show you a scene that I saw a number of times over the past week, because this really sets up our time well together today and connects kind of what we talked about last week to this week. So if you're not familiar with The Internship, Vince Vaughn, Owen Wilson, Billy and Nikki, they lose their jobs. They're kind of middle-aged guys. They decide to go back at the beginning and take an internship with Google. And this is where we pick up the scene in one of their orientations.
Now, I recognize that Google is not a conventional workplace. Having said that, we have rules. I'm going to ask you a series of questions. You are going to raise the green paddle to indicate yes, and the red paddle to indicate no. So, let's begin. Having a beer with your boss. Some of you are under 21.
Some of us aren't under 21, so if you want to grab a cold one with me, I'm happy to do that with you.
I will not be grabbing a cold one with you.
You get high?
I don't get high.
Okay. I'm not judging. I'm just saying. People do it.
That being said, if you want something cold to drink, we'll hook you up.
Okay. Thank you. Just stop talking to me.
I'm your Bill Holden in Star Trek 17.
I really don't get that reference.
Google it.
Got it.
Dating a fellow intern. This is Google, not Match.com.
Chetty, excuse me, what about a full-time employee, say management level, but not a direct supervisor, great eyes, and a severity to her look that is surprisingly sexy? What's the policy on that? No? That's frowned upon also?
So we'll say no to love.
We'll say no to love, yes.
That's gonna be a no.
Now, taking food home from the office.
Boom. Yeah.
Are you having difficulty with this, Mr. McMahon?
I'm sorry, just to drill down on this, what if it's like a perishable, like say there was a pudding or something that was left out?
You'd like to take home a pudding, would you?
I wouldn't mind taking home a pudding. I don't know anyone who wouldn't. But that being said, I'm just saying if it's going to go bad, is that okay to take it home? Mm-hmm.
Anything else you'd like to take home?
Well, only if there was, let's say, salsa or chips, you know, something that's not wrapped.
Salsa, chips, and pudding.
Or sushi.
Salsa, chips, pudding, and sushi. Anything else?
Ice cream?
Salsa, chips, pudding, sushi, and ice cream.
Pizza.
Salsa, chips, pudding, sushi, ice cream, and pizza.
I wouldn't take home a frozen pizza, but if there was a nice pie that was out.
Oh boy.
I am truly impressed, Mr. McMahon.
Thank you.
At the both of you, at how quickly you have confirmed my doubts about you. Now, let's try this one more time. Taking food home from the office. Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, that is all.
Well, I'm not gonna dress it up. Today didn't go well.
Yeah. Certainly wasn't the first impression we were looking for.
I'm not gonna dress it up. Today didn't go well. Man, I tell you what, last week, Chris helped us unpack this kind of overlooked relationship between great questions and great decisions. And, you know, if we're honest, I mean, in many ways, our decisions are no better than the questions that we ask or the questions that we don't ask. And so in the series, we're giving you five questions, one every week. And we just are saying, hey, if you use these questions every time you make kind of a decision of any magnitude, whether it's relational or academic or professional or, you know, financial, whatever it might be, these will really help you begin to make better decisions. And so last time we introduced the first of our five questions, which is the integrity question, which is the question, am I being honest with myself really? And that's the question that, you know, Owen and Nikki, they just kind of answered for us. You know, it's why I love this scene in The Internship, because, you know, what they kind of showed us is that, you know, acknowledging where we are and, okay, that didn't go so well right there. That's the first step to actually helping us get to where we really want to be. And so I think to ask this question, am I being honest really, is a really good question. Now, the other thing we're doing in this series is we gave you a proverb right at the beginning and said, hey, we want to challenge you to memorize this proverb. And this is the proverb right here. It says, the prudent see danger, meaning they see something and they go, oh, this isn't good. And they recognize it, they adjust to it, and they take refuge. But the simple or the naive or those who don't really understand that all of life is connected, it's not just a series of random events, that the simple keep going and ultimately they end up paying the penalty. Now, the reason we've kind of asked you to commit this to memory is because these five questions that we're giving you each week, they're going to bring up a conflict kind of in your inner self. And there's this voice in your head. We called it a salesperson last week and said, you know, there's a salesperson in your head that sounds amazingly like your voice. It's always trying to convince you of things that you want. And so it tells you to act fast, to decide now, to not wait. And it causes us to focus on the immediate instead of the ultimate. And so this verse is kind of a reminder. It kind of helps us slow down, and it causes us to kind of realize that, you know, we need to step back and take perspective and really consider that all of life is connected, and those things impact the story of our lives. And so today, we're going to take a look at what we're calling the legacy question. This is the second question. And again, as you make any decision of any magnitude, whether it's relational or financial, I encourage you to add this to your decision-making tree. And the reason I say add is because you have a decision-making tree. I mean, you already have it. You may not know what it is, but we all use a filter to make our decisions. So here's another question to add to that, and that is, what story do I want to tell? What story do I want to tell? And so think about it this way, you know, when this decision that you're in right now, or whatever season of life you may be going through, or this relationship, or this business transaction, when it's reduced to a one or two sentence summary, in 2 years or 5 years, what story do you want to tell? What do you want this event right now? Do you want to be the hero? Do you want to be the villain? Do you want to be the good example? Do you want to be the bad example? Or think about it this way, what story do you want to be able to tell to your kids? Or perhaps what story do you want to be able to tell to your grandkids? And see, here's the good news. The good news is you get to decide. See, every choice that you and I make, we are adding to the story of our lives. And so you write your story one decision at a time. And so every decision you make becomes a part of your permanent story, because every decision has outcomes, whether they're good outcomes, bad outcomes, desirable outcomes, not so desirable outcomes. Those outcomes actually become a part of your permanent story. Now, for instance, say your boss comes along and says, hey, I want you to lie to your client about this particular issue. And so you lie to your client. You do what your boss tells you to do. And the client kind of calls you on it. And they call your boss and say, hey, I don't know if you know this, but you know, your employee, they actually lied to me. And your boss doesn't stand up for you. What do? They call you and blame you and say, hey, why'd you lie to them? And you're fired. And so you get fired because you lied to a client. That's not a very good story to tell. So maybe consider a different story. Perhaps your boss comes along and asks you to lie to your client, and you say, you know what, I'm not gonna lie to my client, and you end up getting fired because you didn't follow your boss's orders. Now, that's not a good story either, but I think that's a better story, right? I lost my job because I wasn't willing to do something that I felt like was unethical. Or perhaps if you're in college or high school, your friends, they want you to go out and party, and you've got a big exam to study for the next day, and so you say no. And the next day you go to exam and you ace your exam, and you do this over and over and over again. At the end of 4 years, you end up walking out with a degree. Well, that is a great story to tell. And so the point is, I want us to see that every decision and the outcome of that decision, these become a part of our story. And so decision by decision by decision, we are writing the story of our life. And the cool thing is, because you're writing it, there are moments where you get to hit pause. There's moments where you get to decide, okay, what is the story from this point forward that I want to tell? Which means that the decision you may be wrestling with right now, that one day you're going to be able to tell that as a part of your story. Now, the challenge in all of this is that we don't often think of our lives in terms of story, do we? In fact, if you recently lost your job, let's say, you know, you're trying to figure out how to survive this season without a job, all right? I mean, you know, one day this is going to be a two or three sentence paragraph or you know, in your story of your life. But right now you're like, okay, what story do I get to tell? All right, I lost my job. I was somewhat embarrassed. I started drinking too much. When I was drinking, I said some things on social media I wish I wouldn't have said. I offended some friends. I turned off my kids. I mean, that's not a great story, right? And it's understandable. I mean, it's understandable if we do that. But at the same time, you know, losing a job, I mean, that's kind of, you know, terrifying, right? If I'm out of work for a period of time. But it's oftentimes in those valleys that some of the most important decisions in my life get made and tell my story. Now, I think another reason that we oftentimes, you know, don't think about our story in the midst of the decisions we're making is because we get distracted by the pressure and the emotion that comes in the moment. And think about this. Emotion, when it comes to decision making, it's like a fog, right? I mean, it cloudies up our ability to make good decisions at times. And you know how this works. You're facing a deadline, or you've got somebody saying, hey, I need a decision and I need it now. You know, are you gonna marry me? If not, I'm gonna leave you, right? And nobody wants to get left. Or, you know, if you don't hit your sales quota, then I'm gonna fire you. And so nobody wants to get fired. And so when we're forced to make decisions under pressure, it's hard to think about tomorrow, right? We're just trying to figure out, how do I get through today? We're not thinking about our bigger story. And so whether it's love or fear or some kind of jealousy, see, emotions that are associated with the decision-making process, they tend to allow us to focus more on the immediate than the bigger picture or the ultimate. And so we focus more on our options in the moment, which is the best of the options, versus our story. And I know that you know this, but I think it's worth mentioning. There are no emotionally neutral making decision environments, are there? I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but there's no emotionally neutral decision making environments. And this is why I'm gonna share something with you, and I'm gonna take a risk in doing this because I don't know all of your stories, all right? And so you might say, well, my story's a little different, Kurt, but here's the thing. I would venture to say that your worst decision you've ever made was likely fueled by something with a strong emotional appeal. Right? I mean, maybe it was the first marriage that pretty much was doomed from the beginning, and you're like, yeah, but we're engaged, and everybody expects we're gonna get married, and so let's just go through with it. Or perhaps it was a purchase or a lease, and you sat in it, and you drove it, and you just pictured how great you looked in it, and so that emotional kind of energy caused you to make decisions. It clouded your decisions. And see, if you work in retail sales, you know this, right? Like, you know exactly how this whole deal works. Like, you know the worst thing that can happen if you're working with somebody who's looking to buy something on the floor, on the showroom floor, the worst thing that can happen is that they walk out the door without making the purchase. Why is that? Because you know the moment they walk out the door, the emotional energy begins to decrease. The emotional appeal begins to decrease, and the chance of you making a sale begins to decrease as well. Now, psychologists, they actually give us a term for this. They define this dynamic for us. And they kind of describe how when our appetites kind of get in the way in our decision-making process, and how we almost feel like we're losing our mind at times. And so they call it this cognitive bias, and they define it as this word focalism. Now, we've all been victims of focalism. Focalism is when you get so hyper-focused on something, almost to the neglect of everything else. Now, in our home right now, and this has really happened over the last 2 or 3 weeks, my kids are absolutely convinced that we need another dog in our home. All right, and we've got a great looking dog. I mean, this is Minnie, our dog right here. She could be a model for Field and Stream. All right, I mean, that's her. That's not like a Photoshop dog right there. That's my dog. And so they got a great dog, but they are convinced they need a dog, and not any dog. It needs to be an English bulldog puppy. Now, I don't know what you know about English bulldog puppies, but they are a lot of work. And so they're every single night, every free moment, I get texts, Dad, did you see these puppies for sale? Dad, here's puppies that need rehomed. Have you followed up? Have you checked on the adoption? When are we getting the puppy? How much does this one cost? I mean, it's constant. In fact, Minnie, good old Minnie, got some bones for Christmas. She got a 2-pack. They saved one that's still sitting on the counter for the dog that they believe we should have in our home that's not yet there. I mean, just the focalism has taken over everything, almost to the neglect of everything else is about acquiring this dog. And so the point of is this. Every emotionally charged decision environment, and look at those eyes. I mean, how does that not emotionally charge you, right? When you look at the eyes of an English bulldog. Every emotionally charged decision environment, it causes us to think about our options, not necessarily our stories. And so there's just a good practice that I want to kind of give you as we think about this, that when you're confronted with anything or anybody that is just has a strong emotional appeal to it, that I want to encourage you to push pause instead of play in that moment, right? This might be the best walkout you can walk out of here with this weekend. When you experience a strong emotional appeal, just use that to cause you to trigger a pause. Maybe take a step back instead of leaning in. Now, that doesn't mean he's not the one. All right, it doesn't mean the English bulldogs may not end up in our home at some point. All right, it doesn't mean that it may not be it's not a great investment opportunity, or that job is not the perfect job for you. It might be the perfect job for you. But in spite of that, when we pause and step back, anytime we experience a strong emotional appeal, what happens is that appeal begins to cloud our judgment. We step back and we begin to get out of that environment. We begin to maybe phone a friend. We begin to get our bearings and say, okay, what does this have to do with the bigger story in my life? And when you do that, you begin to compare that to the broader context of, okay, is this what I want my life to look like? Now, I want us this weekend to look at a story that will help us better understand this from the Old Testament portion of the Bible. And so we're going to look at this story of a guy by the name of Joseph. And I just think this is a great reminder for us, or maybe a picture for many of us, of kind of the legacy preserving nature of this question we're looking at. What kind of story do I want to tell? All right, now many of you, you're familiar with Joseph's story, or you're familiar with like the Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat version of the story. So if you've seen the show, or perhaps read the story, or maybe you're not real familiar with the story, I'm going to kind of give you kind of the big picture condensed version of the story. So around 1800 BC, there was a 17-year-old young man by the name of Joseph. He was the 11th of 12 sons in his family. Now, he finds himself in a no-win situation, but not of his own making. All right, and so his father Jacob made him kind of the preferred son. He loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. Now, the reason for this is because Joseph's father loved Joseph's mother more than all of his other wives, which explaining that is a story for another day. All right, but this, as you can imagine, made his brothers jealous. And so their jealousy got the best of them. And so one day they decided, hey, we're gonna knock off our youngest brother, Joseph. And so that's what they go to do. They take him out, they're gonna kill him, but they kind of have a failure of nerve in that moment, and so they decide to sell him to a slave trader instead of kill him. And then they go home and they tell their dad, we don't know what happened to him, we think a wild animal killed him and ate him. Now, these 11 young men, think about this, they have a secret now that they have to live with for the rest of their lives. I mean, think about this, this is a chapter of their lives they're not gonna be able to probably tell. I was so jealous of my youngest brother that I, along with my 10 other brothers, we beat him up, we sold him, we told our dad he must have been killed by a wild animal, we broke his heart. And that's not a great story, is it? Now, here's the implication. Joseph's brothers, get this, they're liars for life. And if you don't hear anything else today, I want you to just kind of latch onto this for a moment. Please, don't decide anything that will make you a liar for life. Because, I mean, whatever the trade-off is in that moment, it's not worth living with that thing in your story for the rest of your life. Now, back to Joseph. Joseph ends up on an auction block in Egypt, and while he's on this auction block, he's purchased by this military officer named Potiphar. And so Joseph has a decision to make. He's now a slave. Am I going to run, or am I going to do what most slaves do? Am I going to do as little work as possible with as bad an attitude as possible, or am I going to throw myself fully into this new role as a slave and serving this family with everything I've got? Which is kind of interesting for a rich kid who kind of had everything he ever wanted, was pretty entitled to have to consider at this point in his life. Now, here's what makes this story so relatable for you and me. All right, see, none of this so far in Joseph's life was because of anything he had done. Somebody else took control of his life. Somebody else took control of his story. And so his story, perhaps like your story, it was hijacked. I mean, it was commandeered. It was taken over, right? And he's like, I got screwed. Somebody kind of interfered, and my life looks this way now because of somebody else's actions. But see, somehow Joseph, he overcame this. And he refuses to just throw up his hands and like let fate have his way. And so instead, he decides to lean headlong, head first, into serving Potiphar's family as if Potiphar's family was his own. Now, just think about this for a moment. Think about how amazing this was. I mean, think about your life right now. Think about everything you've experienced over the last 2 years. Think about all the things you've experienced during this COVID season that are out of your control. All these things where it's just easy to throw our hands up and be like, oh my gosh, I didn't choose this. This is somebody else's doing. You know, think of all the emotions, all the frustration that you have experienced, that I've experienced over the last 2 years. Think of the anger. Think of the apathy. Think of the, oh, it doesn't matter what I do. I'm just going to take care of myself. I'm going to take care of my life. I'm not going to live my life in regard to others. I mean, think about what the story of your life might be telling. I mean, think about how easy it is to go, yeah, I'm going to just take care of me. I mean, everybody's kind of out for themselves. I'm going to take care of my interests, my needs first. I'm not going to really worry about how my life is affecting other people's lives. I mean, just think for a moment. What if right now, the decisions that you're making right now were actually writing the story of your life? Like, what would that story say? See, eventually, Potiphar notices that Joseph has just totally leaned into this thing. And so he gives Joseph more responsibility. He makes him the head or the master of his entire household. Now that's a story worth telling, right? I mean, think about this. His story is like, I was kidnapped, I was sold twice, I was a victim, but I chose to not let the role of a victim dictate my life. And so, I mean, Joseph is choosing the story that he's writing. But then, see, the background track changed again. And so again, Joseph, his life intersects with somebody else's life. This time, it's Potiphar's wife. And again, by no fault of his own, he finds himself in a no-win situation. In fact, in this moment, Potiphar's wife, she goes to Joseph and she insists, she says, Joseph, I want you to become my lover. Now, he was probably gonna be one of many lovers for her. All right, and so Joseph basically has two options at this point, neither of which are ones that are gonna create good outcomes. Now, understand also in this culture, this ancient culture, this wasn't just like a moral issue for him. I mean, today it might be a moral issue. Back in these days, this was like a life or death issue, or really a death or death issue. I mean, as he thinks about this, the way this plays out, it's probably gonna cost him his life either way. Now, if you're a student in the room, if you're a junior high, senior high student, college student, somebody tuning in that's in your student years right now, and you're going, okay, this is where I check out the story. This is getting beyond my life right now. Not so fast. Because remember, Joseph is probably 17 years old, maybe 18 by this time. And so once again, in this moment, he opts for a better story. And it's at this intersection of his story that he employs this very, very powerful technique that I think you and I can actually learn from. In fact, here's what he does right here. Joseph rehearses his story and how he's gonna respond to it out loud in the context of how he's gonna respond to Potiphar's wife. This is one of the reasons we know from the story in the Old Testament how he responded in this. And so I want to kind of paraphrase the first part of what he did right here, and then I'm going to read to you from the text kind of the next part of his story. So essentially, here's what he said. He said, Mrs. Potiphar, I've come to this land as a slave. I had no rights, no future. Your husband purchased me, and I did my best to serve him and to serve you. Through hard work and God's help, I've gained the trust of your husband and you, and he's put me in charge of his entire household. And then he goes on to say, with me in charge of the household, I mean, think about this for a moment. He told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. Think about this right here. He says, no one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. I mean, the implication, what Joseph's saying is, Mrs. Potiphar, this is not just your story, but this is my story right here. I mean, you really need to rethink your story, Mrs. Potiphar. I mean, do you really want an affair with a Hebrew slave to be a part of your story? See, Joseph, he pushes the pause button and he steps back and he kind of rehearses this story in the broader context of all that's happened, of all the confidence that Potiphar has gained in him. In light of God's mercy to me, I mean, my whole life is in a place that I didn't expect it to be. And then he asks this question. He says, how then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And any sin against God really is ultimately a sin against usually other people as well. And so basically he's like, why, Mrs. Potiphar, would I want to add adultery to what's turning out to be a pretty good story in my life? In other words, there's two stories that I can choose to tell right here. And so, you know, which of these two options do you think are the best options? Here's story number one. Your husband, he gave me an opportunity that I never dreamed that would come my way, and I have been faithful to him, to your husband. And God, who's been faithful to me, continues to watch over me and continues to look out for me. Oh my gosh, that sounds like a pretty good story, right? That's better than I would have ever dreamed. Or here's story number two. Your husband gave me an opportunity that I never dreamed would come my way, so I took advantage of his trust and I had an affair with his wife. What story do I want to tell? Ms. Potiphar, what story do you want to tell? See, whatever decision you're in the middle of right now, it's no more than a story you're gonna tell in 2 years or 5 years or 10 years. It's gonna be two or three sentences. And so we get to decide, what story do I want to tell? Now you probably know Joseph, he chose the right thing and the right thing didn't necessarily go the way that he planned. And so Potiphar's wife, she decided to accuse him, probably because she felt rejected. She accused him of raping her. And so Joseph lands himself back in Pharaoh's dungeon. But see, Joseph's story isn't over. Now let's be honest, whenever you and I find ourselves in a long, difficult season, when things do not go the way that we planned, it's easy for us to begin to realize and make decisions and think we're just stuck in this chapter and this is our story. But we have to remember it's just a chapter. And the decisions we make in that season actually can affect if our story ends well or if it ends bad. And so if you know the story, you know that Joseph, while he's in the dungeon, he does the same thing in the dungeon that he did when he was the master of the household. He does what Joseph does. He decides well, and he wins over the favor of the prison warden. Now think about this. I don't think anybody's life goal is to win over the favor of the prison warden, right? I don't think that's like, woo, man, that's a good dream. But that's what he does because that's what his option is. So several years later, now don't miss this small little detail right here, right? Because you and I, we're like, well, hey, next week, I hope things change, or next month. Don't miss this detail. Several years later, he finds himself being ushered back into Pharaoh's presence to interpret a dream. Now, you might say, why is he being ushered up to interpret a dream? Well, see, Pharaoh had a dream that he thought was pretty significant for the nation of Egypt, and none of his magicians were able to interpret it for him. So he brings Joseph up, and in kind of a surprising twist, Joseph goes up and says, man, Pharaoh, I don't know that I can interpret this dream. And everybody kind of oohs and ahs because that's not the answer Pharaoh was looking for. But he says, but my God, the God of the Hebrews, I believe can help me interpret the dream. Which was kind of a dangerous thing to say because Pharaoh, by the way, kind of sees himself as a god. And so that was kind of dangerous to say, hey, my God can actually help me. But see, Pharaoh, fortunately that day, was probably a little more curious than he was furious. So he let Joseph go ahead and interpret his dream. And so according to Joseph, he said, hey, this is what God is telling me about this dream. He says, Pharaoh, Egypt is going to have 7 years of record grain harvest. In essence, you're going to be swimming in grain. You're going to have more grain than you know what to do with over the next 7 years. Now, here's why this is such a big deal. Because, see, bread was a staple in this ancient culture. And so if you didn't have grain, you didn't eat, people starved. So this was like really, really good news. And so that was just half of the dream. All right, part one of the dream was Egypt is going to have more grain than they know what to do with. And so that's good news over the next 7 years. But those 7 years are going to be followed by a famine that's so bad that everybody's going to forget about how good those 7 years actually were. Now, when Joseph finishes interpreting the dream, everybody assumed he was going to be escorted down to the dungeon. But Joseph wasn't finished. He does the unthinkable. He actually offers Pharaoh unsolicited advice. Now, nobody gives Pharaoh unsolicited advice, especially a foreigner who's been brought up from the dungeon. And so here was the advice. Joseph said, Pharaoh, listen, somebody needs to wake up every single day focused on this problem. In fact, somebody needs to wake up every single day that is thinking about and preparing for what's coming. Pharaoh, you need to put somebody you trust in charge of grain storage over these next 7 years. And there was silence in the room. Everybody was waiting to see how Pharaoh responded. But Pharaoh, he stands up, he smiles, he looks at Joseph, and he says, can we find anyone like this man, one in whom this is the Spirit of God? And then Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has made all this known to you, there is no one so discerning and wise as you. And then this next line just like blew everyone away. He says, you shall be in charge of my palace, and all my people are to submit to your orders. Only with respect to the throne will I be greater than you. So in this moment, Joseph is made prime minister of the entire nation of Egypt. Because once again, Joseph did what Joseph does. He decides well, and he devotes himself. This is an unprecedented opportunity right here. Now, 7 years later, just as he had promised in the dream, a famine devastates the world. And all of the Egyptians, they go through all their grain, and their cupboards are now bare. And Joseph, he opens up the silos of stored grain, and he feeds the entire nation. And before long, people from all over the region, they hear that Egypt has grain, so they start caravanning to Egypt so they can buy grain, including, get this, and this is so amazing. If you know this story, you know what's about to take place, including Joseph's 10 brothers, right? And when they arrive in the community, Joseph's out in the community and he recognizes them immediately. But see, they don't recognize him because he's now 30 some years old. They haven't seen him since he was a 17-year-old young boy. They thought he's probably dead. He's probably shipped off somewhere. Now, if you've read this story, and if you haven't, man, you should. There's so many details that we're not getting into right here. But here's what I want you to see. Joseph reveals his identity to his brothers. And it would be an understatement to say that they were shocked. Not only were they shocked, I think they were terrified. In fact, they begin to beg him for mercy because they believe that he should punish them as they would probably punish him if he had done to them what they did to him. But see, here's the point of the story. Joseph wasn't anything like his brothers. And you know why? Because throughout his life, he refused to react. He refused to react, and in refusing to react to the circumstances, he did not become like the people that he didn't like. He decided against the gravitational pull of bitterness. And so as a result of that, he now has the power. He's now free from his past, and he's free to write a better story. He's free to write a story that has a different ending. And he decides to write a story that's worth telling. Because in that moment, he made a decision. I'm not going to let revenge be a part of my story. Now, in addition to saving Egypt and rescuing them from the famine, he rescues his family and he rescues his family's family. And I'll tell you what, that is a story worth telling. One response, one decision at a time. Which brings us back to you and brings us back to me. And brings us back to this question, what story do you want your life to tell? You know, I don't know what decision you're facing right now. I don't know what thing's going on in your life right now, but I want to tell you about a conversation that I had with one of my kids about this time last year that really has lifted up why this question, what story do I want to tell, why this question is so important. It was almost a year to this week. I had a phone call from my daughter who was at college at the time. She just returned for her second semester of her freshman year. And she said, Dad, I'm really sad for a bunch of my friends. And she said, you know, a bunch of my friends, they're just like turning away from their faith. And of course, you know, I said, well, what do you think has caused this? And she said, well, I've been asking them questions. And she was a part of all these groups on her campus and Bible studies and faith groups and parachurch groups. She started talking about how, you know, the social unrest of the last year and the racial unrest and even the insurrection at the Capitol that happened, you know, I think just the week before this. And I'm here going, oh my gosh, they're probably bailing. They're thinking, oh my gosh, where's God in the midst of this? Why is our world this way? Why do these things keep happening? And she said, no, that's not it at all. She said, the reason they're turning away from their faith is because they're coming back from Christmas break, Christmas holiday, and they've watched their parents react to all of these things going on in our world. And they've watched them react out of fear because they're losing control, or the world's not the way they want it to be, or they feel like the world's going in a direction that they don't want and they don't know what to do, so they're reacting and they're spewing all this hatred at people, and they're refusing to acknowledge the narratives of people who maybe have a different story than them, and they're reacting with vengeance instead of love. And these are the very people in their life who told them you should always love other people, not act hatefully, and yet they're doing the very thing they taught us not to do. And she said, I've talked to a few of my friends that are just like, if that's what it means to be a person of faith, I don't think I want anything to do with faith. And she's like, I'm burdened for them. And that conversation really impacted me. And the reason I share it with you is this. You never know who or what hangs in the balance of the decisions that you're making. All right, this is such a big deal. All right, this is bigger than you. It's bigger than me. And I like to remind parents of this every chance that I get. But the most significant thing, if you're a parent, that you can do might not be something you do or something you stand up for or something you defend when you feel like things aren't going the way that you want or something goes against your values. The most important thing may be someone you are raising. And the impact comes from the story that your life is telling. See, like Joseph and his brothers, they're writing their story one decision at a time. And the outcome of those decisions, those become a part of our story. And so, man, I just hope for every single one of us that as we walk out this week and we can say, okay, what does that look like and how do I write a good one? And I hope you've decided a good one up to this point. And if you haven't decided a good one up to this point, remember, that's a chapter of your life. You can exit that chapter and begin a new chapter. But see, I want to give us a challenge. I want to challenge all of us to kind of commit to a decision right now as we prepare to go into this week. And here's the thing I want us to consider. I want you to consider, why would you decide? Well, I decide the story that I'll be proud to tell. And this is one of our next steps this week, and you get in your connection card. In fact, I encourage you to do that. Not for our benefit, but for you to say, hey, I'm gonna declare this right now. I'm gonna decide from this point forward, I'm gonna decide a story that I'll be proud to tell one day to my kids, to my grandkids perhaps. And I'll begin to decide on that accordingly. Because see, your life is not just a random array of events, but it's all connected. And those things all connect to become your story, even though it doesn't feel that way oftentimes in the moment. And so I hope you write a good one. And I know the people that are looking to you, the young eyes that are looking to you, hope you write a good one. And the people that are depending on you, and the people that you're leading, hope you write a good one. And so what kind of story do you want to write? I hope you'll decide a story that you'll be proud to tell. We're going to pick up here next week with question 3, which is going to be the conscience question. I want to pray for us. Let's go ahead and stand, and let me pray for us, and we're going to sing one more song. God, thank you for inviting us into your story, and thank you for meeting us in the midst of our story. It's amazing how you do that. And I know we're going through seasons where we're experiencing things and navigating things and making decisions on things that in many cases we have never done before. There's no playbook for the season that we're in right now, and yet, God, I pray that you would help us this week to keep our bigger story in mind and not just get consumed with the here and the now and the options in front of us, but to consider the ultimate and to step back and to realize we can press pause and that we can actually begin to navigate a different story. And God, I just pray that you help us write a story we'd be proud to tell. And God, I pray that you remind us, every single one of us, because we probably need some reminding that you have a hope for us and you promises that you have plans that are good. And so we just pray that you would kind of cement that in our heart as we close today.